helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah on News 104.5 WOKV.
You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. My name is Scott Young. I'm your host here, along with Eddie Farah from the law offices of Farah and Farah, bringing you the Consumer Law Hour every weekend. If you've got questions, Eddie Farah is the man to answer them. 855-765-1045.
That's right, Scott. We'll give it our best shot.
We'll take our best shot at it. We are down a man today. Chuck not with us this afternoon.
That's all right. We got a lot to talk about. And it's good to be here, Scott.
Glad to have you back in the studio. Happy to be working anywhere. With you again.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for helping us out. And you get into the Consumer Law. I like your input, and you've always got a nice perspective on some of the issues we're talking about. It's good to have a non-lawyer kind of chime in and give their perspective on what's going on here.
I like to think I present a John Q. consumer point of view every once in a while.
That's what we like. So, and we like opposing views, too. I mean, that's what the show's all about. Sometimes we talk about things that maybe lean one way, but we're open for ideas, we're open for opinions, we're open for anything.
And we're open for calls at 855-765-1045. Give us a shout.
Yeah, I want to go back to last week. We had a couple of phone calls, and I tried to call them back on Monday because I had some answers, but I couldn't reach our listeners. But I'll go ahead and maybe they're listening today, and I can clarify a couple of the calls that we had or questions we had last week. One had to do with, or was it 2 weeks ago? Because I think we had the tax people on last week, but this was 2 weeks ago. One gentleman had called, and I think he was 72 years old, and he was getting his Social Security retirement. He thought that, and he wanted to go back because he was disabled. He said he couldn't work anymore. He wanted to get his SSD, his disability, but once you're 65, you just get your Social Security retirement amount. You don't get any more. He thought he would get receive more money each month if he was receiving Social Security disability as opposed to Social Security retirement. But once you're 65, what you get is your Social Security disability amount. I mean, retirement amount, excuse me. So anyway, that answers that question. The other... did I make myself clear on that, Scott?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, because
I thought there was some kind of a provision about that once you cross that age threshold, it became one set parameter that you qualified under, and that was the compensation tier.
Right, it's the retirement amount after 65, no matter how disabled you are. Okay, the other gentleman had a call. He lived in a neighborhood where they had some HOA rules and restrictive covenants, and his car was being parked. He parked his car on the street. The neighbor comes over, puts a note on the windshield, you're in violation of the HOA rules, and makes claims about lawsuits and sanctions and penalties. Well, you know, I talked to a real estate friend of mine who does these things. Unless it comes from the HOA, it means nothing. A letter on somebody on your car, a neighbor coming over and threatening you, means nothing under the HOA rules. It's got to come from the association. And they've got to follow their protocol and their pre-suit requirements. I don't think they're allowed to just go and just file a lawsuit against you as a homeowner if you're violating some HOA rules. They've got to put you on notice and give you time to correct it. So this gentleman doesn't have anything to worry about until he gets something from the HOA itself. So that answers those two. We've got a couple of phone calls if you want to take those now.
All right, we're going to jump in with Bill in Hastings. He's got an interesting prospect for us. Stand by.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
And Bill, you are connected to Consumer Law Hour.
Okay. I'm interested in filing a class action lawsuit against both the Walmart store chain and the FBI, and possibly even the state of Florida as well, because they're discriminating against two different classes of people. The first class of people would be purchasers who would like to buy a firearm who are 18, 19, or 20 years old. And the second class of people would be anyone who attempts to buy a firearm if they, at a Walmart store, if they were to go there and attempt to buy a firearm and they get neither an approval number nor a denial from the ATF or the FBI. In other words, they're supposed to give an approval number within 3 days. And theoretically, if they do nothing, the store has the option of selling the firearm anyway without the approval number. But Walmart will not do that. So in other words, if a customer goes to a Walmart store anywhere in the country and attempts to purchase the firearm, and they ask the ATF for the approval number for clearance to sell them the gun, and if they do nothing, they don't give them the approval number, but they also don't deny the sale because they have no legal basis for denying it. So then they just leave it in limbo, and for months on end, the person sits there and not be allowed to buy their gun.
Okay. Why has that happened?
It has happened, not to me personally, although at one time my wife tried to buy a gun at a gun store, and they got neither an approval number nor a denial number, and after 3 days they went ahead and sold her the gun. This was a different store. This was not Walmart.
Yeah.
The policy of Walmart, which they have recently announced, is that unless they get a total green light, meaning the actual approval number from the ATF when they run the background check, which is done by the FBI. In other words, unless they get a total green light, they won't consummate the sale. They'll refuse the sale.
Okay, well.
And then it seems they're violating the person's right to keep and bear arms because the Supreme Court has ruled that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't think that's not a protected right under the Constitution. It's not like, to me, discrimination is based on, I think, in the Constitution, based on, you know, race, you know, religious beliefs.
Protected categories.
I mean, there are certain protect, as far as I know, because I don't do constitutional law, but my understanding is discrimination is based on race, you know, nationality, that sort of thing, religion.
But they're starting to.
But you're not. It's not a protected class.
Yeah, but like for example, sexual orientation is not one of those protected classes.
I think sexual orientation now is a protected class.
Well, then they've added it because it wasn't historically
a protected
class.
But it is now under labor laws, and you'll see it.
But what I'm saying now is why if I have an individual right to keep and bear arms, why should I not be able to buy that weapon at any store of my choice? Because what about that case where somebody had a bakery, and they wouldn't bake a cake for a gay wedding, and they wouldn't go to the gay wedding and serve the cake?
Yeah,
they were sued, and then they were ended up losing their bakery on account of it. A huge judgment against them for like $140,000.
Well, I know. I thought the judgment was against the school for boycotting them.
No, it was the case I'm talking about involved someone who wanted a particular bakery to bake them a gay wedding cake, and due to the religious preferences of the person who owned the bakery, they refused to do it, and they were sued by this, I guess, a lesbian couple that wanted their wedding cake made from that particular bakery.
The case I heard about was where the bakery sued the school and received a huge judgment. Man, it was a different case.
It was a Colorado case that involved court finding against the bakery because they alleged discrimination against particular customers.
Yeah, well, that's protected class.
Okay.
But let me ask you this.
What about age discrimination? If it's a person's 18, 19,
yeah,
20 years old?
That's probably a protected class.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They under the new law of the state of Florida, they will not allow 18, 19, and 20-year-olds to buy a rifle or a shotgun, even though nationwide it would be legal.
Bill, every constitutional right has a limit. I mean, you have a right to free speech, mm-hmm. but you can't run into a theater and yell fire and say, "Hey, it's my," you know, people start panicking and run out of there. I mean,
exception to the free speech law.
Well, there's all kind of exceptions to every.
Okay, but what makes you think there's an exception to the right to bear arms for people who are 18, 19, and 20 years old?
They're not saying you can't bear an arm. There's a limitation
on
it.
You can't buy it, though. You can't go. If an 18-year-old in Florida now wants to go to, a Walmart store and buy a rifle or a shotgun, he will be turned away. He will not be allowed to purchase the weapon. Well, is that not a violation of his right to bear arms?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question I can maybe ask him. But let me ask you this. Let me go back a little bit. because you're bringing up this gun thing, and I wanted to add just because I was looking at some statistics, some data yesterday, that in this year, 2019, so far, there have been, this is according to the Gun Violence Archive, I don't know what kind of group that is, but 246 people have been killed so far this year, and 979 people have been injured due to mass shootings. That's just 2019, okay?
Right.
Almost 250 people dead, all right? Before Columbine in 1999, mass shootings only occurred in the U.S. every 6 months. Between Columbine and 2015, when that shooting occurred in Charleston, South Carolina, these mass shootings occurred every 2.5 months. And since 2015 till now, they're occurring every 47 days. So it seems like the gap between these mass shootings gets shorter and shorter. I mean, what do you think about that? Maybe that's where Walmart's coming from. Maybe they're saying the young people with these guns are causing these mass shootings.
Okay, were done by young people. Many of the mass shootings were done by older people. The biggest one was done by a middle-aged man out in Las Vegas, I think it was.
He
killed like about 58 people or so.
Right. But I'm looking at maybe the way Walmart's looking at the age of these shooters and saying, listen, maybe they just don't want to sell it to 18 to 21-year-olds. I don't know.
But instead of 18 to 20-year-olds, what if they just didn't want to sell it to, say, black people?
Well, I don't know.
That would never be allowed.
Yeah.
Why should they be allowed to discriminate against 18, 19, 20? You know, every time the...
Because they're not a protected class.
Every time the country has gone to war, they draft people starting at the age of 18.
Right.
So they're going to say, okay, well, you're old enough to be drafted and sent off to the other side of the world to fight battles, but we're not going to let you buy a gun here in the United States.
I know, but the Army's all volunteer now. There is no draft.
Yeah, but they still make people register for the draft.
Yeah, but there's no...
And so that tells me that if there really was a major war, they would bring back the draft.
Bill, hold on for a second. There's a guy on Palm Coast that wants to respond to what you're talking about.
Okay.
Can we get Jimmy on the line? Scott? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to put him on in just a moment.
Hold on.
Let's see, like that. Connect you. Jimmy, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing? I just kind of called in on this one because I was born in 57. I was raised with guns. I've had guns, and not a single person has ever been shot by my guns. And there's a reason for that. I'm a very responsible person. I was raised a responsible person. My father and mother raised me that there are consequences for actions. We have a situation in our country that has taken 45 years to develop, and it is the society that has created the situation. The guns are not the issue. Unfortunately, the guns are the end issue, and the ability to put your hands on a gun is definitely the issue, because the people that can put their hands on guns have the lack of moral fortitude in which to understand there is a consequence.
But that's not what he was talking about, Jimmy. He was saying that...
No.
Bill was...
Go ahead.
Bill was stating that Walmart is not selling guns to people of a certain age. Like, if you're 18, 19, or 20, you can't go into Walmart and buy a gun. And he says, even if you're entitled to a firearm, if you don't receive the proper number from Florida Tobacco and Firearms, then they won't sell you the gun, even if you're entitled to it. So he thinks that's...
I understand that. I totally got what he was saying, but you had brought up the fact that the amount of mass shootings and how short a distance and that's happened, and that's what causes my concern about it's the society now. Whatever happened to a person who sells has the right to deny service to somebody? I mean, we have gotten so upside down in our society about everything. There's no common sense anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to Bill's question. I'll talk to a constitutional lawyer and find out and report back next week what Walmart's doing. But he's got a good question. My answer is I don't think the people that... or he's talking about are a protected class under the Constitution. Therefore, they cannot.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
And again, that's another one of those.
If they were saying only black, we're not going to sell guns to black kids 18 to 21, that would be a protected class. Then I could see it. But
I totally get that. Yeah. That makes total sense. It'd be race, creed, color, religion and such. But, yeah, no, it's I think it's the fix is a meteor. I just want it to hit my house at about 3 in the morning when I'm sleeping.
Yeah. So, okay, thanks a lot.
Have a great one.
All right.
Bill, are you still with us?
Yeah, Bill. Yeah, did you hear that? Bill, I'll tell you what. We'll try to let me do a little bit of work next week, and I'll try to report back next week on the show about your question because I don't know the answer to it.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Well, thanks
a lot. Nice we'll try to get a constitutional lawyer on the line, I think. Maybe.
Well, Bill, we appreciate the call, and thanks for stimulating some really interesting conversation right there.
Good question.
We will be back with more of the Consumer Law Hour after this quick break. You are listening to News 104.5 WOKV. And we're back on the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV, checking in with Ray in Middleburg. Ray, how are you doing today?
How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Great.
So this is what I got going on. I worked for an employer before, and my checks just didn't seem what they were supposed to be. So when I left from there, went to another employer making the same amount per hour, I noticed my checks went back up. I left from that company, ended up going back with that guy again, and my checks dropped significantly. I still have a friend of mine that's done the same thing, but he's still currently working there. So yesterday we compared check stubs. What we figured out was I had 46 hours and my buddy had 45 hours, and there's only a dollar difference in between our pay. So it shouldn't make a big difference on the federal withholding that's coming out of our checks. But on my 46 hours at my new employer here, my employer only took out $77. Now, with my buddy having 45 hours last week, his employer that I used to work for took out almost $145, which is double the taxes. So I went back and I pulled up another check stub of mine where I turned 58 hours probably a couple weeks ago, and my federal withholding it was actually only $121 on 58 hours. So you're 13 more hours of overtime than what my buddy make, and he still had way more federal taxes being withheld. Now, me and him both confirmed that he's claiming zero, I'm claiming zero on the W-4. So there's not a big difference in what's going on, but I'm just not understanding why when we work for this one employer that there's so much federal being withheld back out of our checks.
Yeah,
just something doesn't sound right to me. Like
so you claim the same. You're not claiming any dependent. Claiming zero.
Correct.
So you're not claiming. I mean, are there insurances being taken out? Some sort of insurance?
We didn't even look at it. See, and that's what we didn't even compare the insurances. You know what I mean? Because we talked about the insurance, which his insurance is a little more. You know what I mean? But we were just looking at the total. As far as the taxes part of it, not the insurance, like we left that to the side.
I got you.
But, I mean, he's taking out almost double of what my employer takes out on an everyday week basis. You know what I mean?
Is this a big company that you're working with?
This guy has probably over 40 employees.
So he's probably not doing the payroll. Is he doing the payroll? Does he have a payroll company doing it?
He used to have a payroll company do it, and I believe he's doing everything in-house now.
Okay, so you should go talk to that person.
Okay.
I mean, that's what you got to do. Now, if it was a payroll company, you know, like Paycor or, you know, one of these, you could go contact them directly.
Okay.
But if he's doing it himself, is somebody in-house in his office, or is it off-site, like an accounting company?
No, it's in his office.
Yeah, then you need to go talk to them about it. Maybe they're calculating it wrong. That's something you got to take a look at.
Okay. Because I guess from my understanding is with the federal and the medical and the Social Security, I pay in a portion and then he's supposed to match that as well. I'm not saying he is doing it, but I'm just hoping that he's not saying that he's putting his portion in and I'm paying everything.
Right. Are you an hourly employee?
Yes, I was.
Okay. You're getting paid by the hour. Okay. Well, I mean, you could always contact the government. I mean, I'd go to the employer first and see if he made a mistake. He owes you that money back. Maybe they're miscalculating it.
Just out of curiosity, have you cycled through a tax season with this guy already before and had had any kind of a tax discrepancy or anything when you prepared any filings about that?
Not when I filed my taxes, I didn't. I mean, this last year I had my taxes put on hold, but that was because I filed my W-2s before their employers got their numbers in to the IRS. But nothing as far as the IRS coming to me saying my W-2 and the numbers that he sent in didn't match.
Yeah, because I think it's difficult for the employer to get by or cheat the government by taking all the taxes out of your check, because they know how many hours you're working. They know what your employer should be paying and what you should be paying. The government knows that.
Yeah.
I mean, they know if they're, because they get a separate check. They get a separate check from the employer for your share of the taxes. I mean, yeah. That'd be difficult to, you're going to be difficult to pull that off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying the man's doing wrong. You know what I mean? That's not what I'm saying. It just concerns me that I left from him.
Yeah, I know.
Because I leave from him.
Oh, I got you. I mean, listen, that kind of money adds up to a large sum over a course of a year.
Yeah, you definitely want to follow up with the payroll figures about that with the payroll department, and maybe they can give you some guidance as to what the particular distribution on those wages are.
Okay.
All right, Ray, we appreciate your call.
Thanks a lot, Ray.
Ed, I see you sitting on the line. I appreciate your patience. We're going to get to you, and we come back after another quick break. Fox News, traffic, and weather coming up next on News 104.5 as the Consumer Law Hour continues. And we're back on the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. Ed in Switzerland, appreciate your patience. We are coming to you now. Thanks for calling the Consumer Law Hour. How can we help you?
Good afternoon.
Hey,
well, yeah, how you doing? Yesterday I was in a shopping center parking lot, and I went to back up to position myself to pull into a parking space. And the left rear corner of my car hit the front right corner of another car. And, okay, I found the driver, and we called the police. They came down, you know, filed a report. I figured we had to do for insurance. And I was given a ticket for $164 and 3 points. Now, is that normal?
What kind of ticket?
Something like...
What was it?
Let's see.
What?
It was in Duval County. It calls it a backing improper.
Okay. Improper backing.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. So, you have a couple of options. You know, you can either pay the ticket. I mean, I think there's you don't want the points. That's the big thing. I mean.
Yeah, I know. But if I just pay the ticket, I still get the points.
You're going to get the points, right. But there's a way not to get. I know there's one way not to get the points is to hire an attorney and have the attorney go in front of the judge and ask to, you know, they'll look at your record. And if you're pretty good, the judge will dismiss the points, but just give you a fine for the ticket.
Okay.
What about attending the class? So that way you
I know that I can attend the class too.
But I think there's a third way to do it.
Well, when I went to my insurance, they had a statement in there that if it's on private property, like a shopping center parking lot, there was no need to even call the police.
Well,
so did he really have to write me a ticket?
No,
on
but you called
property?
Him. What you could have gone you for something where no one's injured, you could have just exchanged information.
Okay, I always thought you needed a police report.
No, you don't.
You know,
not when there's just property damage. You can exchange the information, give each other the driver. It's up to y'all. I mean, I'm surprised the police even showed up for something like that. They're busy doing other stuff.
I called them, you know, and told them what happened, and they sent a community service officer around.
Yeah, I mean, what I would have done and something like that, just minor property damage, exchange insurance information, and really based on the damage that was done, you're probably better off paying it out of your pocket so your rates won't go up. But, I mean, I think that's... Water on the bridge now.
It's going to be expensive.
Oh, it is.
Officer wrote on the thing $7,000.
Oh, you're kidding. I mean, I thought you were about a couple hundred bucks.
The front
bucks.
Quarter panel is going to have to be replaced.
That's different. Okay, still, I mean, you could have just exchanged insurance information. Now you got this ticket thing. But I think you can, as long as you don't receive the points, you're okay. It's not going to affect your premiums. It's all about the points.
Yeah, I know. But just 3 points seemed awful high.
Well, I think that's the minimum.
I've never had points.
But I think that's
the
minimum.
I've never had points.
I think that's the minimum for on a ticket. It's 3.
Wow.
Yeah. You can check it online.
Okay. Shows how often I get tickets, huh?
Yeah, you don't get them that often. But, you can either, like I said, you can either attend the class, hire a lawyer to go deal with it for you. So it costs you a couple $100 plus the fine. Or there's a third way that you can go online, read the back of the ticket. I think now there's a third way that you can have the points deleted off your record. So you won't be assessed.
Okay, there's nothing on the back. What it is, it's like an 8x11 sheet. On one side, it's got the info. On the other side, there's a bunch of options.
You can contact the DMV, and they'll tell you.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that. I was just told recently there was another way. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, if you've got somebody who's reasonable, you exchange the insurance information. The only problem is some people have done that before. They've exchanged the insurance information, and then when the insurance company calls, the whole story changes about how the accident happened. And so that's why anyway, I don't think you'll have the points.
Well,
you got a good record. You're not going to – you're being in good shape.
I'll just have to take that course and – I don't know what that's going to run me, but
yeah, it's going to cost some money.
Cheaper than getting a lawyer.
And you're going to pay the fine too for the ticket.
Yeah.
So there's two.
Well, I was adding the fine and the course cost of a course compared to what it would cost me for a lawyer and the fine.
Mm-hmm. And no, it's going to be less expensive. So.
It's still cheaper out of pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty.
All right. Good luck. But there's a third way. But check. There may be a third way of having the points off your record. So anyway.
All right, well, thanks for calling, Ed. We appreciate it. Good luck with that. Looking at the website here, there are standard 3-point infractions that include your minor moving violations and certain things like failure to yield, which sort of falls into an improper backing. I guess that would be sort of comparable to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, that's expensive. 3 points right off the bat now.
It is expensive, yeah. I mean, it's a revenue generator.
True story.
These guys, it's another tax that we all pay. So anyway, but moving on, we're going to talk about residential leases now. We're not real estate people, but I saw a residential lease the other day. Somebody had me look at it, and it was real interesting because it was for a single-family residence, and it included in the lease a exculpatory clause relieving the owner and the property manager of any kind of liability. Never seen that in a lease before. So basically this lease says is you, the person who is leasing the tenant, you're leasing this house, and you're taking it as is. You've had a chance to inspect it, and you're satisfied with the condition, and you agree that any claim for any type of injury is waived. And that's the first time I've seen that. So if you go into the house before you rent it, the landlord gives you a right to inspect it. You look around. Everything looks pretty good. God forbid... something falls from the ceiling and you're injured or who knows what happens. I mean, all kind of things could happen.
You miss a step on the walkway.
Yeah, because the walkway is not properly constructed or not up to code. A million things could happen in a house, as we know. Maybe there's faulty wiring and the place burns down, God forbid. So all that, this landlord, I guess everybody's trying to relieve, get out of liability. And that's the first time I've ever seen that in a residential lease. Maybe other people or listeners have had it, but I thought that was interesting.
And just out of curiosity, if they put that in the lease, is that necessarily legally binding?
Yeah, it's a contract. You're accepting it. Unless the court determines it to be unconscionable, it's legit. It's enforceable.
Wow, caveat emptor.
Then you're fighting. I mean, before you can even get to the injury, you're fighting another lawsuit to have the lease thrown out or this provision thrown out as unconscionable. So that's a hurdle you got to get across before you can even start talking about what's my injury worth or what the liability is. So anyway, I don't know if anybody else has been in that situation. It's the first time I've seen it. And I mean, these exculpatory clauses, you're seeing them everywhere. There was another case in Florida, and I'll give you what the law is on it, where a customer at a gym sustained serious injuries after being knocked unconscious by another customer who was using the gym. So, of course, the person who's knocked unconscious says, hey, why do you let this crazy guy in the gym? He almost kills me. So he sues the gym. The gym says, oh, you can't sue us because there's an exculpatory clause. The rule in Florida is for an exculpatory clause to be enforceable, the wording has to be so clear and understandable that an ordinary and knowledgeable person would know he was contracting away his rights. So that's the standard, that it's got to be very simply worded. Basically, if you get hurt here from any type of situation,
it's on you, not on us.
You're relieving the gym or whoever it is from any type of liability or responsibility for it. So sometimes, you know, it can be interpreted in different ways. I mean, and sometimes, you know, a word can mean many things.
Right.
And maybe you're not holding, maybe, I mean, I would argue in this situation, yeah, I'm holding the gym. Like, let's say a machine breaks and injures me. That's one thing. I'm relieving the gym of that liability. But this was another customer at the gym that came at me and hit me. And I didn't contract that away. I thought I was just contracting away the gym's responsibility. And this was a customer who caused the injury. So, I mean, these contracts can be subject to interpretation and legal challenges, but you're seeing them a lot everywhere you go. People are trying to protect themselves and their businesses by getting you to sign away your rights to make a claim.
No, so. I'm just saying, it seems like there might be a little more to the story on the gym situation there. And if not, I'm curious, did the guy get hit in the head with a barbell or,
I think he was punched by another customer who was using the gym. Maybe there was an altercation between them.
Oh, and then that turns into a whole criminal liability issue, too.
Could be, and
potentially.
If you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills, in all likelihood, the guy that punched you out probably didn't have the money to pay you.
True story.
And the gym probably has the ability through their insurance to pay you for your, medical expenses and injuries. That's why people bring in the corporate guy. They got the money.
Right. Well, we've got one more segment to come up, so stick around for our final segment of the Consumer Law Hour, coming soon to you here on News 104.5 WOKV. We're back for the final segment of the Consumer Law Hour today. Our phone lines are open at 855-765-1045. If you've got questions, we've got an opportunity for you to talk to a legal expert. Again, 855-765-1045.
Yes, Scott. Pay for delay, these generic drug companies. It's against the law, but it happens every day because you read about it in some of the legal periodicals that we receive at the office, where people, even though the fines are huge and the penalties are severe, but it just continues to happen. And what happens in a pay for delay is that, let's say a generic drug is coming onto the market, and so the brand maker will pay the generic drug company, who has the right to sell the generic drug, a lot of money to not produce the drug and put it on the market, which means we as consumers, we have to pay the rack rate for the original drug.
For the premium as opposed to a generic.
Yeah, so we don't get the generic because the people who produced the drug and had the original patent are paying the generic drug people money not to put it on the market.
So nice work if you can get it, I guess.
Yeah, it's against the law. And my question is, let's say they're paying the generic, when they get caught and they pay these huge fines, do they reimburse the people who had to pay the premium prices the money? I don't know where that money goes. I know they're fined hundreds of millions of dollars, but I guess they could track down all the people who purchased the premium drug and reimburse them the difference between the generic and the premium.
Or maybe they could introduce some sort of an appeal suit. And by that, I mean an audience appeal where they can solicit responses. Maybe that's the wrong word for it, too. But they can seek out customers who might have claim against that, I've used this product at this time. And
they knew who took the drug, and they can calculate the period of time from the generic should have been on the market. But anyway, we got some phone calls. We'll take that. This pay for delay thing is, drug prices are so high. A lot of people can't afford what they're having to purchase every month. And for a pharmaceutical company to go in there and purposely pay the generic drug maker money not to put the cheaper drug on the market is unconscionable. But
all right. Well, we're going to take a call real quick. Hi, you're on with the Consumer Law Hour. What's your name?
My name is Edward Bethel.
Edward, thanks for calling. Edward, what can we do for you today?
Well, I got a letter from a law firm, Lubbock, Texas, and it said that I have a citation for $182 down there.
Edward, you're breaking up. What's the citation for?
Can you repeat that? We didn't get all of that.
The citation is for commercial vehicle inspection.
Yeah.
Edward,
I tell you, we can't hear you. Why don't you leave your phone number with our producer, and I can call you on Monday.
Oh, that'll work.
Okay, because you're not coming through, so we want to help you. So I'll be in phone contact with you next week. But just leave your number with our producer.
All right, Edward, stay on the line for us. Ebony will get your information
in just a second. Greg, he's on a topic that.
Hey, Greg.
We don't have much time there. We want to hear you.
What can we do for you?
Okay, so I just wanted to respond to Bill's call earlier. I think where he's getting confused is that Walmart is not obligated to sell a weapon. I think where he's getting confused is that they are restricted from selling a weapon if they don't get the approval. But if they if nothing comes from the Treasury Department, the Firearms Division of the Treasury Department, then I think what Walmart's done is made a corporate decision saying that since we haven't been totally green-lighted for PR reasons, we're just going to ignore it, let it fall through the cracks.
Yeah, but
there's nothing in the regulations that says that mandates that they must sell it to anyone, whether they have a number or whether they don't get a response back from the Treasury Department.
Yeah, but he thinks that's a violation of the U.S. Constitution.
It's not.
Yeah,
it's not a violation because no retailer is obligated under the Constitution to sell a weapon to somebody.
Correct. Thanks for calling in, Greg. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
We appreciate your call. I'll tell you what we're obligated to do is wrap up the show for today, but we've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of good callers. We appreciate your considerations as you call us every week, 855-765-1045 on the Consumer Law Hour. We will talk to you again next week on behalf of the law firm of Farrah & Farrah, Eddie Farrah and Chuck Farrah, our hosts. My name is Scott Young, Ebony, our producer. We will talk to you next week. Have a great week in Jacksonville. You're listening to News 104.5 WOKV.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.